This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Mark Cuban.
How you do anything is how you do everything. If you don't pay attention to detail on the little things, you're not going to be in the habit of paying attention to detail for the big things.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Hey, he wears his hat backwards. Well, I wear my hat backwards because my dad had a fro and I wanted to wear his hat. And if I put his hat on at age six and, you know, he's got a 8 1/2 and I got like a little 5, it's not going to really stay on my head.
Jeannie Buss.
Thank you for having me. What a nice turnout. It's good to see you. Everybody.
John Smoltz.
Is if you don't have the imagination and the willingness to fail or not being afraid to fail, I don't think you can be truly great.
Candace Parker.
I have so much hope for this generation coming up that have grown up with women in sports, in leadership roles, on television, speaking about sports, speaking knowledgeably about sports.
Pau Gasol.
To me, all the work that I've done, all the humanitarian work that I've done has always given me great perspective, has allowed me to keep my feet on the ground, and has really put and reminded me what's truly important.
Damian Lillard.
That was for Seattle.
Just to name a few. Welcome to Sports Business Radio. Now, here's Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio, one of my favorite episodes of the year, the preview of March Madness. And we do so with my longtime friend, Joanne Scott, the managing director of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. I've known Joanne for, gosh, probably 25 years, dating back to her days at USA Basketball. She worked at Nike for a long time, and now she's with the NCAA, and she runs Men's March Madness. That's why we did not discuss Women's March Madness. So understand that going into our show today, we just kept the conversation to Men's March Madness, because that's what Joanne oversees. She does not oversee Women's March Madness. But from Selection Sunday all the way through to the Final Four, she will take us behind the scenes. Just fascinating to plan and operate an event of this magnitude. Joanne will also give us a sneak preview of what we can expect, what's new with the tournament this year. We'll discuss that with Joanne Scott on our show this week. And Sports Business Radio is powered by Malka Sports. Learn more about them at malkasports.com. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
I'm doing great, and this is a fun week. We always love talking about March Madness. Joanne is great, and I can't imagine having her job. Like, she has just got so much in front of her, but yet she dominates it. She's so confident. She has such a great, great outlook on the whole event, and man, she's just a smart lady. A great interview today. Always look forward to the show.
Well, and I know you and I like making our picks for March Madness. And Underdog Fantasy is the official gaming partner of Sports Business Radio. It's the fastest growing fantasy app ever, with investors that include Mark Cuban, Kevin Durant, Adam Schefter, and Jared Goff. And Griggs, they've got a March Madness game going on right now. So if you come in the game and play Pick'em, which I play Pick'em and Rivals a lot, every time that Houston plays, the University of Houston, you're going to get an odds boost for one pick'em slip, including a player from the Houston team. So the odds boosts are substantial, and you decide the other players to include in your slip. If you use the code SBR when you sign up, you get your first deposit matched up to $100. So if you put $100 down, Underdog Fantasy is going to give you $100. If you put $50 down, Underdog will give you $50, but up to $100, they will match your deposit. This is a fun time of year. I've been doing pretty well with the NBA pick'ems and rivals recently. So go to underdogfantasy.com and download the app on iOS or Android. You're going to have a lot of fun with this. I know we've had a lot of fun with it since they became a partner about a month and a half ago. We did some Super Bowl stuff. Now it's into March Madness, which is also one of the most bet sporting events of the year, Griggs. Griggs, who do you like to win the whole thing?
Well, I filled out one bracket yesterday kind of quickly, so I didn't really dig in it too much, but I've got Gonzaga and Arizona in the final game with Arizona winning. So that's my pick.
It's so funny. You and I always have the same picks.
Because we're awesome.
So that would be funny because the coach at Arizona was Mark Few's longtime assistant and Gonzaga for a long time. So that would be an interesting matchup there. But yes, I've got Arizona winning the whole thing. And Gonzaga, I have been knocked out earlier. I don't think they're going to get to the championship this year, but I've got Arizona winning the whole thing. So we'll see how that turns out. But again, go to underdogfantasy.com, download the app. On your first deposit, up to $100, they will match you. So have some fun with that. All right, Griggs, some headlines. First of all, March Madness. We're going to dig into that with Joanne Scott. But according to multiple reports, the NCAA is going to pay out more than it ever has before to D1 schools. We know that March Madness is really the largest revenue source for the NCAA every year. So the governing body has allocated $625.5 million, according to the 2022 NCAA Division I revenue distribution plan. So last year, the NCAA distributed $613.4 million. So this year, $625.5 million. Last year, $613.4 million. By the year 2032, the NCAA has budgeted $826.6 million worth of distributions. Again, that's spread out to all the member schools. So, Griggs, a lot of money generated from the TV partners. You've got, you know, TNT and CBS, and we'll talk about that with Joanne, but this is the biggest revenue producer. That's why a few years ago when the tournament didn't happen, that was a big blow to the NCAA and the member schools because this is the big revenue generator.
Well, and you think some of these small schools that, you know, don't get into these big tournaments very often, when they get in, that's a big payout. And that makes a big difference in a program for a, you know, Norfolk State or a Tennessee State or whatever they are. You know, that's a big revenue help for them in the next coming years. It's a big, big thing for these small schools.
So this year, the rights payouts for media is about $870 million. They'll reach $1 billion by 2026. So again, lots of money for March Madness. All right, other headlines. This would usually be number one. Tom Brady is back, Griggs. Sitting around on Sunday, watching Selection Sunday on CBS, and all of a sudden the alert comes. Tom Brady is unretiring after only 40 days. He's back for his 23rd season, and at 45 years old, he will be the oldest starting quarterback ever. I'm not really that surprised. There had been whispers that he was going to come back. Some people said he was going to come back with the 49ers, but that would have required a trade from Tampa. And it seems like they're getting the band back together. Gronk and others are likely to surround Tom Brady. And, you know, when you do something as well as he's done it for so long, it's hard to walk away. And I'm sure after 40 days, he was kind of missing it. And look, he was second in the MVP voting behind Aaron Rodgers last year. It's not like he went out on the decline. He's still doing really well. So maybe he wants to go out on top, and we'll see. But look, I think it's great for the NFL and their business. Tom Brady is the face of the NFL. He's the GOAT. And when he's on TV and he's playing in games, more and more people are going to watch. So it's a great thing for the Bucs, and it's a great thing for the NFL, Griggs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt it's great for the NFL, and obviously he's the GOAT, so it's good for TV and everything else. But it just gets annoying when these stars retire, quote unquote, and then come back. It feels so like it's just kind of a media thing and a hype. Like I feel like he knew he was coming back, and it was just like, oh, I'll get the attention on me for 40 days and then come back and make a big scene. I don't know. I lose a little bit of respect for these stars that come back, but you know, it is good for NFL, so I'll be watching.
I tweeted out, is this Tom Brady's spite store season? If you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David like I do, and Larry opened a spite store coffee shop, Brady didn't get to go out the way he wanted to. Remember, it was going to be his announcement, but it was kind of hijacked. And we said, well, Tom Brady likes to control the narrative. And so you wonder, like, is that part of this? Like, he wants to go out in his own way. And of course, he's not going to come back and go through the grind of an NFL season just because he wants to go out on his own terms and announce it on his own platforms. But you just kind of wonder, like, all right, maybe I can take a mulligan on this and I can come back and I go out on top after winning the Super Bowl. I can announce my retirement, you know, after the game. It's a little bit more on his terms than the 40 days ago announcement was. So we'll see. Griggs, Major League Baseball is back. They must have been listening to our show last week with Keith Foreman when we basically said to them, do you want to drive your sport off the cliff to irrelevance? And that's where they would have gone. But credit to them, they had lots and lots of meetings and they put together a collective bargaining agreement now that's going to last through 2026. Spring training runs from March 17th to April 4th, and then the regular season starts on April 7th. They are going to get all 162 games in, something new. 12 teams will make the playoffs, expanded from 10. So, Griggs, that new CBA is signed, and it's good for baseball. And another thing that's good for baseball is Apple. And Major League Baseball announced Friday Night Baseball, a weekly doubleheader with live pre- and post-game shows that will be available to fans in 8 countries exclusively on Apple TV Plus as soon as the regular season begins. Apple is paying a reported $600 million for these rights. And, you know, a lot of people for a long time have been speculating that Apple's going to get into the sports game. And is this their entree? A lot of people think they're going to get into NFL and they may have Sunday Ticket and they may do some things around that. So if they start putting together some big packages with Major League Baseball and the NFL, Griggs, that's going to make Apple TV Plus even more attractive to customers.
100%. I love it. And I'm excited for Friday Night Baseball. I think it's going to be fun. It'll be interesting to see who they, you know, get for their set and their TV show and the pregame if they're doing that. But yeah, I mean, if we've talked about before, streaming is continuing to grow. You see it with Thursday Night Football now on the NFL is going to be exclusive on Amazon Prime. So it's just it's continuing to take over from the terrestrial TV and going to streaming services more and more. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus.
One more headline, also TV related, Joe Buck leaving Fox to head to ESPN and join his buddy Troy Aikman. They're going to do Monday Night Football. Joe Buck is going to get a reported $15 million a year. Troy Aikman is going to make Tony Romo money, so he's going to be more in that $18 million a year. So ESPN went big with their Monday Night Football package. They're going to have a Super Bowl. They're in the rotation, so they wanted Buck and Aikman. It's going to be interesting to see who Fox Sports comes up with to replace them. Joe Buck, no more World Series on Fox. So it's going to be interesting, but I think this is a great pairing, Griggs, and ESPN did really well with getting these two. They're paying a premium, but these are two really good broadcasters.
I agree. And I think, you know, other than the Manning show, the Monday Night crew has been kind of iffy the last couple seasons. So I really think this is a good move for them. I think they'll get a lot more viewers with it because Aikman and Buck are just iconic. They sound great together. Everybody knows them. I think it's going to be an easy transition for the Monday Night crew. But yeah, I'm down. I think it's great. But that's a lot of money. But they are worth it because they're both very good.
All right. I want to let our audience know that Nate Checkitz, the co-founder and CEO of Roan, the official menswear partner of Sports Business Radio. He's going to be my guest on next week's edition of Sports Business Radio. He's got such a fascinating story as to how he started Roan. They've got some great partners like NBA star Jimmy Butler, but they just make great, high quality menswear. And I love where we're going with athleisure, as they call it. You know, I'm sitting here wearing my guru pant right now. I'm not wearing slacks or jeans, or I'm wearing more comfortable clothing because Roan has more comfortable clothing. I'm wearing their RainTech hoodie, their Spar jogger. It's just really comfortable clothing. And Roan is offering Sports Business Radio listeners 15% off of your purchase. Go to roan.com and enter promo code SBR15 at checkout to receive 15% off your purchase. That's roan.com. and enter code SBR15 at checkout. I'm really looking forward to having Nate on our show next week. All right, coming up next, my conversation with Joanne Scott, the managing director of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championships. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. My guest is Joanne Scott. She is the managing director of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championships. I love having her on every March to discuss March Madness. Joanne, thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
I'm great, Brian. It just is amazing how we do this every year, and how quickly as I get older, these years just fly back by faster and faster.
Yeah, they do. And I think of all that has changed from last year to this year. And, you know, last year we look back and you were hosting the entire tournament in the state of Indiana. Capacity was up to 25%. This year, it looks like things are more back to normal. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I would say that's an accurate assessment. We still have, as you know, everyone knows, we have 16 sites for our tournament from the first four through the final four. So every city and every health department has varying COVID protocols, including in Portland, which were there for the first and second rounds. So we will abide, we're back to normal, but we also will abide by the COVID protocols in place of Portland and of San Francisco and anywhere else that has their own COVID protocols. But we are at absolutely maximum capacity. And so again, that is a big difference from last year. And so I think most exciting is the tickets, and what we've seen is that, you know, it's trending very well for this, where we are in this point in time, that it's people want to get back to March Madness and they want to attend. So it's 100% capacity, and we are planning as a normal tournament with adapting to local protocols is what I would say.
So like contact tracing and all of that stuff, you know, like, again, I got a note from my daughter's school the other day, and they're like, hey, no masks, no contact tracing, like things are starting to open up. And I'm just wondering, you know, I know that was kind of a pain for a lot of the players and coaches last year. Is that still according to local ordinances, or, you know, is there going to be contact tracing and stuff like that?
So last year we dealt with the Marin County Health Department, and then also because our first four was in our early rounds, we're also in Bloomington, Indiana, and West Lafayette. So we were dealing with just like one large health department. We're still dealing with all the health departments, but I would say to you, when it comes to contact tracing and others, most of the majority, I would predict, not knowing this data, but we've been told that the majority of our teams are vaccinated and boosted. So I would say to you that contact tracing, when it comes to vaccination, has a different, you know, defined what contact tracing is. Most of them don't have to go into quarantine and isolation when they're fully vaccinated and boosted. But if folks aren't, there will be COVID testing required before they can travel per the NCAA code of conduct. And then that, again, would default to the local health department if someone were to test positive.
It's great to hear that ticket sales are going so well across the country. And I think what I'm about to say, I'm probably in the minority on this. Joanne, I kind of liked having the whole tournament in the state of Indiana, the birthplace of basketball. I bet it was a lot easier to run logistically. I just think the venues are such storied venues. Was there ever any consideration of, you know what, maybe we just keep this in Indiana?
I think everyone was surprised, including our coaches, on how much they enjoyed it. I think, first of all, it gave them this sense of a little bit of comfortable. They could feel comfortable because
right.
the teams, you know, they weren't concerned about going out and, you know, and monitoring their players and their teams and their coaches. So I think there's this first level of comfort. They really enjoyed seeing one another. You know, every now and again, we'll put two teams in a hotel that don't play one another in their early rounds, but they normally aren't in the same hotel. But what they really enjoyed was seeing one another and being next to a practice court with a coach that you knew. So there were a lot. We've had suggestions of doing it in one city. We're a national tournament. So we do like, you know, putting it throughout the United States. Also, our schools and our universities help us host. I want to say we were building the airplane, you know, we're building as we went, but it did run amazingly smooth. We had a few blips, but it went very, very well. I think we may look in the future if, you know, we would reevaluate maybe a certain round or, you know, in one location, but I unless the committee decides, our men's basketball committee decides, it will remain a national tournament with all the various sites.
All right. So for the Sweet 16 Elite Eight, You've got San Antonio, Texas, San Francisco, California, Chicago, Illinois, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And then the final four is at the Caesar Superdome in New Orleans. Those are some big cities and, you know, just places where I'm sure people will like to gather, and venues that you've been at before. The Chase Center is state of the art and beautiful. So I'm sure you're excited to be in there for the first time.
We are, and we have been looking forward to that. And again, all NBA venues, so world-class venues,
right.
You know, for the teams, for the regionals, and large cities. Again, we bracket and we assign teams to their regions per the seed list, but we do it by regionality. We do it by mileage. So I think that is another reason why doing, to your earlier question, that's another reason why having it to being a national tournament where folks can drive, you know, also helps. So very much looking forward to those regionals. And then again, been traveling to New Orleans for a year. And I was just there a few weeks ago during Mardi Gras for a press conference. And New Orleans is back is what I would say.
Yeah, I've seen the Mardi Gras images on social media, and it looks like they're definitely back.
That's good.
All right. So for the student athletes, this is always one of the most special experiences that they'll have in their life. And I know, you know, they get some tickets for their families. What else are you doing in order to make this a memorable experience for the student athletes?
Well, you know, I always say the swag bag is, you know, having worked at Nike, it's always about the swag.
Right.
So I go to the youngins, our former managers and former players that work for us, and say, look, we just, you know, that swag bag has to be what they want and what they want to wear. So the swag bag every year is what we try and do as target for that student athlete. You know, we've been doing this for years, but just, you know, we want it not to feel like, I mean, it's the Chase Center. We know that in San Francisco, and it's the various different, you know, the AT&T Center in San Antonio, but we want it to feel like it's a, you know, a March Madness venue. So the decor has been elevated, but I would even say at the Final Four, you know, especially with New Orleans, we've got some special ideas on the team welcomes when you land in the city and you are there and you first come off that airplane in such a historic city and an incredible city like New Orleans. So it's just taking those student athlete journeys, and we map that journey, and we just try and identify at what different times are there things we can do. And not, you know, some of it is, you know, just making sure the experience goes well, you know, and it's not just always something that you're trying to gift them, but it's just making sure that it's an elevated experience.
You were kind enough to send me some swag from last year's tournament for me and my daughter. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's in the swag bag for the athletes? Can you give us any kind of a hint, or is that top secret?
That is top secret, and we've had photos, and they are going to reveal that. We don't even like to reveal that until the student athletes receive it.
Okay.
So I think they're going to do a simultaneous reveal on social platforms when the student athletes get the product.
Awesome. Year 12 of the CBS Turner partnership. It's one of my favorite partnerships in all of broadcasting. I've always said this. I love when, you know, Charles Barkley and Clark Kellogg are talking, and you know, just some real diehard basketball fans, and you get the college perspective, the pro perspective. I love the partnership. Is there anything that we should look for that's new with the TV and streaming coverage, the March Madness Live app? Is there anything we should look for?
You know, I just, this morning we had about a 3-hour, I would say we do it every year. It's a seminar with their talent and their producers and their directors. What you said is so true on that partnership, and it is it's authentic. They really enjoy getting together this time of year. They enjoy talking about this tournament, and they shared a couple of things with us this morning that I was aware of, but I'll share with you today. First of all, Bob Fishman, who is, you know, produced this tournament for years, is retiring. So he will be he's a director of it. He'll be retiring after this Final Four, and he's done, you know, I think over 26, they said. So that was gave a little honor, a shout out to him this morning. But March Madness Live will be on 18 different platforms.
Wow.
And so that's really how the next generation is consuming March Madness, is, you know, on a different platform than probably what our parents watched it. on and what we grew up watching it on. And that's everything from, you know, Roku to, you know, LG and Xbox One, Apple, just, and, but you can also get it on your normal, you know, desktop and web. So there are 18 different platforms. And there's also going to be, we also have an added feature for that this for March Madness Live, but unfortunately, it's just a little too early for me to share with you that because we haven't released that yet in a press release yet either.
Okay. Well, I'm always excited to watch the coverage. I try and consume it on every different platform just to get a taste for what it's like. Like you said, the app is getting better and better every year. I think it's just next level. And, you know, again, I have a teenage daughter, so I know that that generation is watching on their iPad or their phone. They're probably not sitting in front of the TV. And if they are, they're beaming it from their phone or their iPad onto the TV. But I think you guys have done brilliantly with developing the app and making it easier and easier to use every year.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we monitor every year with our friends at Turner is, you know, who's logging on laptops, who's logging on their mobile phones and every year and how long are they watching? It's fascinating data that, you know, is at our fingertips with using that app. So but I agree with you. It's for those, if anybody's listening, hasn't looked at March Madness Live, I highly suggest that you check it out this year.
All right. So Selection Sunday, that's a big part of the TV coverage and, you know, how that all goes down. You've explained to us on previous shows kind of how Selection Sunday works with the committee, but do you mind giving us a quick synopsis of, you know, on Selection Sunday, as the tournaments are starting to wind down, the conference tournaments, how many people are in that room? What are you looking for? And, you know, what's the deadline for getting the selections to CBS and Turner so they have them to reveal?
Sure. Well, it's really just three phases. We do selections, we do seeding, and we do bracketing. And what we do is we're going into the room tonight and we will, there'll be 12 committee members. That's new this year, Brian. We added two members to our committee this year. So instead of 10, we'll have 12. But we all go into the room tonight with right now it's probably three other NCAA staff members and myself. And we'll select and seed the teams for the next few days. What happens on Sunday is, you know, we have games that go very late into the night on Sunday night. And we when we come in early on Sunday, we scrub. And what scrubbing is it's a method we do with our seed list of scrubbing teams with one another on the seed list. So if you're a one seed, you're scrubbed with the two seed and you compare those teams, and then the two seed is scrubbed with the three seed and you scrub the seed list. So we usually spend, you know, a lot of time Sunday morning scrubbing from the night before, but there's, you know, I think there's six this year. I haven't looked lately, but I think there's six games going on Selection Sunday. So we'll start to bracket. So we'll go through it. We'll do seed lists. We start to bracket, but we could have 10 to 12 contingency brackets because the Big Ten Championship could have a team that's either in the two teams in the tournament or one not in the tournament unless they're an automatic qualifier. So you have to have a seed list for both scenarios. So you could have two different seed lists for the Big, you know, 10, and then, you know, the SEC Championship is on Sunday and you might have to have two different seed lists for that. So we start about, you know, 11 a.m. noon, and we start bracketing the various. My first year in 2015, I think we had 14 contingency brackets.
Wow.
We won't have that many this year just because we have fewer games, but we will bracket the various contingency brackets and the various seed lists on Sunday afternoon. And then we sit and wait for, you know, once we get through that, we wait to see who wins the various games. We typically wait till the Big Ten game is over. If we can send the bracket to Turner CBS before that, we do. But it's typically not very much sooner than what the show is. It's amazing how quickly they can put the graphics and the show together. So I would say late. The show's on at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Selection Sunday. And, you know, if they get it, sometimes they get an hour ahead of time. Sometimes they get it 13 minutes ahead of time.
Wow.
Yep.
Holy cow. All right. I get asked this question all the time. How much of the bracketing is pure analytics versus, you know what, this might be a compelling matchup if these two teams kind of, you know, met at some point in the tournament?
Yeah, it's conspiracy theory is what we always say. It is very much driven by a very public document called the Principles and Procedures that have been in place by the great committee members that have, you know, just, and Tom Jernstedt, who is an Oregonian, you know, may he rest in peace. It is a lot of years of learnings of this Principles and Procedures. It's all done, again, geographically. So, again, what we do is we seed the top 16 by the closest region. The regional first is the, how you, and so you do it by mileage. And then once you seed those, then you go to the first and second rounds and you do the same thing by mileage. What happens in the Principles and Procedures, if you read the document, is there are some principles of not playing your conference team if you played them more than twice already this season, things like that, that cause you then to shift some people. But it's all done by the principles and procedures and software that, you know, when we are bracketing, you know, it tells us, you know, who's the closest city and the closest site for that team, and then whether or not they can go there or whether they can't go there because there's a violation of a principle. So as much as now it does end up with some conspiracy theories, but it's usually just the way the seed list works out and the way the principles are written.
Yeah. I think the most compelling storyline of the tournament this year is this is Coach K's final tournament. And, you know, it's been his farewell tour this year. Such a legendary coach. Is there anything special planned for Coach K's last tournament? Or is it just like, hey, you're part of the tournament and, you know, we'll salute you accordingly?
You know, I met Coach K in 1988 and when I worked at USA Basketball, and I've known him for a long time. I thought this weekend was incredible. I watched every absolute minute of it that I could. Our committee evaluates that. What I've learned since coming to the NCAA is we have a lot of coaches that retire every year. Obviously, we don't have coaches, you know, like Mike Krzyzewski that retire every year. So our committee evaluates that. But we always try and work with the school on that is what I'm trying to say. You know, if they don't want something, then we don't want to do something, you know, and we don't try and be a distraction during the tournament at all. So, that will be it's on the committee's agenda. That will be up, you know, stay tuned if anything happens. And a lot of times we do it, but, you know, it's just communicated. We don't want to make a big deal out of it. We're happy for you to do something, but maybe do something post-tournament.
All right. I've got to ask you, because you've known Coach K for so long, as you just pointed out, whether it's when you were at USA Basketball or at Nike, now with the NCAA, is there a specific interaction or just, you know, something you may have observed with him that maybe people don't know about that you could go, this really tells the story of who Coach K is?
I felt that there's a really good article on ESPN.com. But what I would say is since the day I've met him, you know, it has been about his family and his mom and dad and his daughters and Mickey and Chicago. And then it's been about the military, you know, his military upbringing in the military academy and Coach Knight. And he doesn't waver from that. And, you know, that is those influences in his life are what always, I believe, directs him from what I know him to make his decisions. And he doesn't waver from that. And here he is, you know, some 40 years later, still talking about the military, Chicago, the influence of his parents and his daughters and his wife. So that has not changed since the day I met him.
So he's true to his roots.
True to his roots. Absolutely true to his roots.
You know,
it's authentic.
Yeah. I found it interesting on the ESPN broadcast of his last home game at Cameron Indoor, they were saying, well, you know, maybe he should go take an administrative role. And he knows the NCAA and the you know, basketball landscape so well. And I found myself saying, no, I hope he doesn't do that. I hope he goes and spends time with his family. And, you know, he's worked hard for all these years. Let's ride off into the sunset and kick back on the porch and drink some lemonade. Do you think he would go do something else? Or do you think, you know, he's going to ride off into the sunset?
I think he deserves to ride off into the sunset. I do think he will do something else. I mean, he enjoys it. He has his, you know, K leadership in the summer. He's been involved. I mean, Duke is so true to his heart. And I think he said it the other night when he said, hey, Duke basketball will be fine, but my loyalty is with Duke. So I could foresee him doing something with Duke University, but, I would say to you, I hope he does. I hope he kind of rides off into the sunset and kind of relaxes a little, because not only does Duke consumed his life, USA Basketball and serving, you know, the country of and USA Basketball for Olympics has consumed his summers. So I do hope he gets, I think he deserves balance.
Yeah. Well, and there's so few people that could do what he did, which is, you know, really command the respect of the pros, just like he did the amateurs. I mean, a lot of the pros would have been like, hey, guy, you've been good in college, but this is a totally different arena for you. And, you know, he was seamless in that arena as well.
He has, what I've always seen of him is he has an incredible gift of communication. And I think that is what has gotten that is he knows what to say, when to say it, how to say it, and in his leadership. But he's a communicator and he's an educator. He really, you know, he's trying to teach you something when he's speaking to you, and he's trying to make you better. And it's just a gift I haven't seen in many people.
All right, back to the ops of the men's basketball tournament. Give our listeners a sense of your schedule. I know you start at the first four. Now you're going to be able to travel again. Last year you were just in Indiana, so you're going to be jet setting again. But like when you're traveling and you're at the venues, what's your role? What are you doing?
So once I leave selections, I will drive from Indianapolis, where we're hosting selections, to Dayton, Ohio for the first four. And I will be in Dayton. And then from Dayton this year, I usually hop around and, you know, hit four sites. But this year I am going to Atlanta, which is where we hold our control center and where we, our chair of our committee and my boss, Senior Vice President Dan Gavitt, we have our PR team there. It's kind of our command and control center for all of the sites. It's where we have every game up on the television. It's, we have our director, our coordinator of officials there, supervisor of officials in case we have officiating, you know, issues. And it's just, and I did this last year and I hadn't done this, but I did this last year. I was just putting out fires, you know, trying to get, you know, 68 teams in within 24 hours in Indianapolis. And it worked really well for me to shift to that role. So I'm going to shift to that role. And just work from the, whether it's PR, whether it's operational, whether it's travel delays, whether it's officiating, we'll just handle that in Atlanta. Then once first and second rounds are over, I'll come back to Indy for a day and pack, and then I'll head out and hit the four regionals that you discussed earlier, and I'll go to San Antonio for the Sweet 16, and from there, the next day I'll go to Philly, and then I'll fly the next morning to San Francisco, and I'll be able to hit that game, and then I'll fly from San Francisco to Chicago for the Elite Eight game. That's on a Sunday. And then Monday morning, I get up and fly into New Orleans. So then New Orleans, we're there a good week before the Final Four, preparing for all of, you know, the NABC, our National Association of Basketball Coaches, is in New Orleans. So we have meetings with them. We have a lot of ancillary great events. Our corporate partners will be in town. So it's a full week.
Wow. Do you find that you're able to be more effective if you're in that command center, or do you like being at the venues themselves where you're sitting courtside and you're really in front of the action?
I think it's a mixture of both. That first weekend, it is amazing. I mean, really seriously think, we release the bracket at 6:00 PM on Eastern time, and we have teams leaving within 12 hours on an airplane getting to the first four. So the first 3 days is 68 men's teams getting where they need to go, whether it's buses and airplanes and hotels and officials getting booked and flights. So I think that first weekend, it's best. I've learned to be in that control room. But I do enjoy getting out on those regionals because that's how I learn and I listen. And I see, and I, you know, and I hear, I mean, you know, I'm dealing from even on site. I mean, we've had a venue that we've double sold a section of tickets and you're solving it. So there's just always something to do, but I think it's being out there and listening to the membership, listening to the coaches, and seeing, you know, okay, how can we take this? What can we do next? How can we take it to the next level? You have to be there to do that. So I think it's a good mixture to do it the way I'm doing it.
And you have such great relationships with these coaches that, you know, I know when they see you on site, they're like, all right, Joanne's here. Things are going to run smoothly. They probably gripe with you from now, you know, from time to time, but like they trust you.
Yeah, that's very nice of you. I think, I've gotten earfuls, you know, and that's what we're here for. You know, it's a national championship. And the key is we talk all the time is we don't want disruption. We want it to feel like the regular season where they're in control. They book their own planes and manage their own travel during the regular year. And so we don't want disruption. So I wanted, you know, if something's gone wrong and I can control it, then, you know, I'll listen. I'll always listen. So, but you know, I do have a lot of friends. It's good, you know, to listen to them because they're always trying to get better. That's what I love about being around basketball coaches, Brian. I've been around them all my life, and every time you're around them, they're trying to be better coaches, and they're trying to make their players better players. And that's what we're all trying to do, is we're trying to make this a better tournament. We're trying to make our employees, everybody's trying to make your own employees be better employees, and I'm trying to be a better employee and a better leader. So I try and learn everything I can from them.
Just a few minutes left. One of the things that March Madness does so well, by the time the tournament's done, like, I know that AT&T, Coca-Cola, Capital One, Marriott, like, they activate the sponsorships so well. I remember all of them. Because to me, you know, if you're watching the Super Bowl and you don't remember the company that just did the commercial, well, what's the point? It's not memorable. So I think, you know, those Capital One spots with Charles Barkley and, you know, it's just all very memorable. But is there anything that you can tell us about with sponsor activations, whether it's with, hey, this is what we're doing with the student athletes, or this is what you might see in a commercial on TV or at a venue that you can tell us about?
You know, I haven't actually gotten to this year see any of the ads yet, other than what I've seen watching basketball, as much basketball as I watch. So I can't really tell you, other than I do, you know, the Capital Ones, I think, you know, as everybody says, they do look forward to watching those every year. I will say, I do think also that our corporate partners are, you know, also looking at the March Madness live, you know, aspect of the tournament, and doing some activations on that as well. And then, you know, as you know, the bracket challenges are like the big thing, you know, you know, enter to win and, you know, pick your bracket and pick the perfect bracket. And so there is going to be a new game that comes out for some folks that, it hasn't been announced yet, but for maybe if your bracket is busted, maybe you can, you know, it's a new game. But they do such a great job with the ads and the activations. But then even on site, you know, we have a March Madness Music Festival with AT&T, Capital One, and Coca-Cola, you know, and then our Fan Fest, you know, Capital One sponsors our Fan Fest, but it includes all of our activations of our sponsors. So I do think that, again, with, you know, COVID and a couple, you know, canceling 20 and 21 being a little bit different, as we talked about earlier, that this is a year where we're really seeing a lot of activation.
Yeah.
But I can't, it's just, you know, it's a little early to be sharing a lot of this year. I guess maybe the timing just didn't line up very well.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I think what I'm seeing, people are coming back to in-person things with a vengeance because they've missed them so much and they want to be at the games, they want to be at the ancillary events and the music festivals and things like that. All right, we'll end with this. So Superdome this year, mm-hmm. NRG Stadium in Houston mm-hmm. following year, my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona, State Farm Stadium the year after that, the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, and then Lucas Oil Stadium after that. So you guys plan, you know, years in advance where you're going to be with the Final Four. And you're going back to places like State Farm Stadium and Lucas Oil Stadium. So there's a familiarity for you. That's got to help.
It really does. And, you know, this will be my first Final Four because I've been here 8 years. We're going back to a venue that we've been to other than Indianapolis. So I've been to, Minneapolis was new in 2019. Atlanta had a new stadium in 2020. Unfortunately, we weren't able to play in. It really does. But keep in mind, Brian, it has to be a stadium with a roof. So we only have a limited amount. We're having more, but we have a limited amount of venues. But right now, we are out in a bid process from 2027 to 2031. So, and that should be awarded in the next, you know, by the end of the year. So we have to go that far out for the hotel room blocks and for the convention center space and for, you know, everything that we need for our event. But yeah, it's there's a limited amount of venues that can actually host it because it needs to be, it's an indoor event. It's not, an outdoor event.
Well, and producing a basketball game in a football stadium, not an easy task. And, you know, you can feel, I remember I went to the Kingdom when it existed, and, you know, you feel like you're 10 miles away. There's like little specks down on the court because you're in this 100,000 seat venue. How do you make it feel more intimate?
You know, it's venue to venue, and we have a seating system that we purchased in 2009. And really, the size of the venue and the way the venue's built determines how many seats we bring in. I think it was Atlanta was going to be our biggest seat build ever, and it might have been 22,000 seats we would have brought in, which is, think about it, is the size of a NBA venue, mm-hmm. right? So it depends on the venue. We've been back to New Orleans. We've been there with the seating system before. Our capacity would be 71,000. I think what makes it look like a basket, and again, that's what the decor and the branding, we want it to look like a basketball stadium, not playing a basketball game in a football stadium. But the seat system, we put right where the football, you know, the turf would be, and we blend it up into the seats. And so I think that's probably why maybe it looks like, you know, it blends well, and it's just, you know, an extension of the current stadium.
Joanne Scott, the managing director of the NCAA Men's Basketball Championships. This thing grows bigger and bigger and better every year. Joanne's a huge part of that. Thanks so much for joining me. Best of success over the next month, and keep up the great work. It's always great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Brian. Good to chat with you. Take care.
I want to tell our listeners about a partner that we're excited to be working with. It's Athletic Greens. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted more energy. I was tired of trying to find the right multivitamin or create the right smoothie or salad every day. I don't have time to figure out what vitamins I'm putting in, and I just wanted a one-stop shop. I wanted something that tastes good. So with Athletic Greens, with one scoop every morning, I'm absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start my day right. You can do this too. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes good. It supports better sleep quality and recovery, and also supports mental clarity and alertness. Your subscription comes with a year's supply of vitamin D, which is so important to add in these winter months when we don't get as much sunlight. It costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Additionally, for every purchase, they donate to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need, including No Kid Hungry here in the U.S. In 2020, Athletic Greens donated over 1.2 million meals to kids. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 travel packets with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/SBR, like Sports Business Radio. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/SBR to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our show staff, Brian Griggs and Josh Blank. And thanks to our partner, Malka Sports, for powering Sports Business Radio. Learn more about them online at malkasports.com. That's M-A-L-K-A sports.com. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
This and every SBR podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and your favorite listening app. Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, Twitter at SB Radio, Instagram at Sports Business Radio, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. Sports Business Radio is produced by Brian Griggs and Griggs Productions. GriggsProductions.com.